This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. Each year, Americans adopt some 20,000 children from other countries. Research shows that these children fare better when they have a connection to their birth culture. When Lori Stern and her husband, Dan Luke, adopted their son, Diego, from Guatemala, they decided to make his birth family part of their life. But there are troubles in that family. On Diego's most recent trip to Guatemala, he learned a painful secret about his birth family. Diego's mom tells us more.
My name is Lori Stern. My husband Dan and I are filmmakers. Our son Diego is 6 years old.
Hey, Gabrielle, you made it.
Hi, how are you?
Look at the big girl.
Once a month, we get together with a group of families who've adopted Guatemalan-born children.
My name is Diego Mapchicailuk.
Diego is a Mayan, Tzotzil Mayan. There are maybe 60,000 Tzotziles who live in a couple of small villages in the mountains of Guatemala. Most Tzotzil are small and strong, like Diego is. As he gets older, he's noticing the physical things that set him apart from his friends. That's one of the reasons we wanted to be in a group like this, because these kids have something in common. And in a way, they're growing up as cousins. A lot of the families in our group really like going to Latin American culture camp with their kids. We respect that. But Diego's culture is complex. He's a Minnesotan. He's an American. He's a Native American. He is a Guatemalan-born American. He's a Tzotzil Mayan. They're all Diego. And we feel like we can give Diego even more authentic information about who he is by staying in touch with his village. We spent time there during the adoption when he was a baby, and we went back to visit his biological mother and siblings when he was three. Now we're going back again. Getting to Diego's village is spectacular. You take a boat across this huge volcanic lake.
We're here.
There are three volcanoes around it. Santiago Atitlan sprawls from the base of one of the volcanoes to the lakeshore. It's a Saturday, and it's like our fourth or fifth day in Guatemala, and we're in Santiago Atitlan at a beautiful hotel called Bamboo.
Can you hear that?
And in a few minutes, who do we expect to show up?
Isabel. Isabel.
And we don't know whether she'll bring the children or how many she'll bring. We're kind of hoping that she'll bring Juan.
Juan and... what's her name? My sister's name? My sisters?
They were Julia and Josefa.
Josefa and Juan and me are all brothers, brother and sister.
Diego's biological mother is Isabel Shikai Petze. Her neighbors don't know about Diego. So our interpreter and friend, Dolores Ratzan, brings Isabel and her children to us.
Let's go see if that's really them.
Isabel had brought two of Diego's siblings, Josefa and Juan.
Juan.
I was surprised when Diego went right up to Isabel and gave her a big hug. Then she took a step back, looked at him, and started to cry. Later, when we asked Dolores about it, she said Isabel was wishing Diego's sister Julia could have been with us because Julia had loved seeing Diego so much. We'd found out just before we came that Julia had died several months earlier. I've asked Isabel many times why she placed Diego for adoption. She always says it's because she can't afford to take care of him. She lives in a cinder block room with a dirt floor. All she has is a clay pot, a grinding stone, and a thin mattress she sleeps on with the children. We always give Isabel whatever money we can spare. Part of why we come is to get to know her better and get a sense of the best way to help her and the children. Dolores helped me ask Isabel how she was doing.
So tell me about the health of you and of Josefa and Juan.
She works hard for food every day.
So what do you eat during the day?
Sometimes she goes to the mountain. And if she finds some wild herbs, that's what she brings to feed the children. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know how Diego's sister Julia died. Isabel said she had stomach problems that got worse because of an infection or a curse, but it wasn't clear. A lot of times, Isabel tells me contradictory stuff or stuff that doesn't make sense to me. Still, when we're together, I feel like there's a mutual respect and affection, but it's hard for me to get a sense of who she really is. It seemed like visiting Julia's grave was something we should do together. I loved Julia, too. She reminded me so much of Diego. She was so sunny, and she laughed exactly like he does. Dolores, Isabel, and I got into a three-wheel taxi called a tuk-tuk. The cemetery was partway up the volcano, overlooking the village and the enormous blue lake. It was a jumble of pastel tombstones and unmarked mounds of dirt. Julia's grave was covered with weeds. Isabel began yanking them out. I helped her pull weeds because it seemed like the right thing to do. When the grave was cleared off, Isabel stood at one corner of the mound with her back to the lake and began to cry. It sounded like it might have been a prayer. It was so mournful. Later, Dolores told us that Isabel was crying to Julia, calling out the memories they'd shared. She said poverty had always pursued them, that she had tried to save Julia, but she couldn't. When we got back to the hotel, we discovered that what Isabel had told us about Julia's stomach illness was not true. She didn't want us to know how Julia had died, because the truth was so awful. In the end, it was Diego who told us the story.
And tomorrow we'll bring you that story, Diego's story. Our story was produced by Ellen Gettler of American Radio Works, the documentary unit of American Public Media.